5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Is it raining out there yet? Is it dark?
It's supposed to rain?
Mr. Dow just came in. I asked him. He said, well, not yet, really. Not here anyway, but 100% chance of rain today. We were supposed to play the Touchdown Club tournament over at Wildcat today, but they postponed it until May. So, yeah, a lot of it's unfortunate, this rain thing. We need golf courses, domed golf courses. That's something that we, okay, we've got domed stadiums.
That's the opulence that we're not going to be able to do. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in Dubai.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, Dubai okay. I could see them saying, you know, it's hot here anyway. Let's just build a dome that spans 2 miles wide.
Right.
Just 2 miles.
What would Phil think about? What would Phil think about something
he
like
would
this?
Think it's low rent, but he doesn't care.
No.
He's still going to use that as leverage.
Well, those people kill each other. They kill people over there.
He's
but
still going to think it use it as leverage against the PGA
against
Tour.
Against the PGA Tour. Yeah, I'm going to play over there.
Right now, Phil's like, I can't believe Will did that, right, guys?
So Phil is out of the Masters, by the way. He's withdrawn.
He has?
Yeah. He's
because of all this?
Because of all this, yeah.
Here's what Phil Mickelson's like. Yeah, Deshaun, I can't believe that, guys. Get him. And then like, what did Will Smith do? Oh, no.
I mean, he do
this,
just...
But this is the thing, though. If you just wait, the news cycle will take over.
But he...
You'll be forgotten.
Phil is... He lost all of his sponsorships. He is... He just said, that's it. I'm staying away.
Set
I'm staying
the year
out of the public.
But you know what? This is... He still...
Well, he's the PGA champion.
So you know when you know you got a stomach virus, right, and you're sick all day long, and then the next day you're starting to feel better, but you're a little worried, like you probably don't want to eat because your stomach's not going to be ready for it. That's where Phil is right now. He just got done having a really bad stomach virus. There's no reason to consume anything. There's no reason to try to go to work. Just sit it out. And that's what Phil needs to do for a whole year. Just sit the whole year out.
Well,
honestly.
He's got to defend his PGA title. I mean.
There's going to be more questions.
Well, that's all right. You can't not show up after you went as the defending champ.
Didn't show up at the Masters.
No, but he's not the defending champ. He's not the defending champ.
Does he have a Masters under his belt?
Oh, God, yeah, four.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. How do you not show up there
as a former Masters
champ? Well,
because he wants to take some time away. He's not the defending champ.
I'd take the whole year out of fire.
Well, did you see who showed up yesterday there?
The Masters?
Yeah.
Tiger. Yeah.
And he looked good.
Yeah.
I mean.
He already said, I'm not going to be any good.
What do you mean I'm not going to be any good?
Tiger said I'm not going to be competitive.
Watch. Oh, put a little something on him and see.
No, thanks.
Yeah, watch.
You know who I'm putting a lot of money on? Anthony Kim.
Anthony Kim hasn't played golf in 12 years.
Why?
Because he got $20 million because of his injury.
Oh, well, you know what?
Now's and if he played one more, if he hit one more ball, he would have had to give the whole $20 million back.
That was what happened?
Yes.
So basically, he just got a settlement.
I think.
Well, when is he allowed to hit another ball?
By 10 or 20, whatever. He got an insurance settlement where if he played one more round,
not ever again.
Yes, ever again.
No,
he got a he got his insurance settlement for being unable to ever play again. Anthony Kim's done. He's not giving that money back.
This could be the year he comes back.
He's not like Deshaun giving that money back.
When's Deshaun giving the money back?
Deshaun's going to give that money back. The Texans are going to sue his ass.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Cal, I mean, a strong figure like Cal is going to step up.
I dug in on it with the guy. Well, I dug in, I'll tell you off the air. It's highly unlikely. Once they traded that contract without going after him first, they basically, in essence, they have forfeited their right to go out and try to get signing bonus back.
Terrible. So,
yeah, so they should have gone. If they wanted to go after it, they should have done it earlier. But once they traded that contract, they no longer have control of that contract. So that means the signing bonus is now. I was told they could try it, but it's not. It's going to be unsuccessful. They'll just waste their money. And I think the Texans are about moving on right now. I really don't think they want to waste any more time.
Anthony Kim was $10 million, not $20 million. So, but he got $10 million. And now you could have made way more than that. But
yeah, Anthony, that's what I'm saying. Is that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I got stories about Anthony Kim though. So I mean,
do you?
Yeah. So I don't know that Anthony Kim was going to get that.
I'm going to ask you a question. Does it involve driving 30 minutes outside of the city to someone's mom's house with his own towel?
No, but that's what Deshaun did. And it came up in the deposition, and Tony Busby leaked it to Cleveland's Fox affiliate. And here is the package that they put together on Deshaun Watson's deposition.
You don't remember her telling you that she wasn't going to go to a hotel room with you?
I don't remember that.
The Fox 8 I team giving you the first look at Deshaun Watson answering questions in lawsuits filed by 22 women.
Women accusing him of sexual misconduct. Strangers he met through social media for massages.
That's why I saw it on Instagram.
So you think you saw a story that involved her?
Definitely possible.
Definitely possible. Did you find her attractive?
That wasn't my intention, sir.
I didn't ask you what your intentions were.
I can't answer that. I have a girlfriend, so that wasn't my intention, sir.
Okay, so you can't answer that because you have a girlfriend?
Because that's not what I was looking for.
What did you want from her?
Just a massage.
Was she a massage therapist?
Yes, sir.
Licensed?
I'm not sure, sir.
Trained?
I'm not sure, sir.
Schooled?
I'm not sure, sir.
Did you tell the Texans you were doing that?
No, sir.
Did you tell your trainer you were doing that?
No, sir.
Pretty risky to go to some place you've never been before, to have somebody you didn't really know, you didn't know anything about their skill level, to give you a massage. So what I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Watson, is why you would post something on Instagram suggesting that you were in New York City when you were instead in Houston getting a massage.
On the advice of my lawyer, I assert my rights under the Fifth Amendment.
In the depositions, Watson also faced questions about driving about a half hour out of town for a massage.
Meeting a woman at her mother's home and taking his own towel.
You don't think that's a little bit strange?
It can be, but I mean, we're just communicating, so.
I mean, seriously, Deshaun, you don't think that's just a little bit weird?
I'm serious too, sir.
Well, I'm not criticizing you. I'm just trying to figure out. Do you think that's a little bit weird?
I mean, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Weird. that is, and it's just going to keep on coming and keep on coming. He's got 22 deposition. It's going to be a ship show for Deshaun over these next, I don't know how long. This is a great tactic by Tony Busby. Embarrass him as much as possible in the public, so the Cleveland Browns and everybody else put a bunch of pressure on Deshaun to settle these things. It's probably hitting below the belt. Rusty Harden's already accused him of the tactics that are ruining his clients' standing in the community and his reputation. This is only going to make it worse. This is just going to get worse and worse and worse. So this is the full court press, and this is the Cougs throwing it over their heads trying to break the full court press.
Troy says this, and this is I want to get into this just for a second. Mm. He says, I'm not a fan of Watson's act, but that's Bush League. Here's what's happening right now. This is not dissimilar to tactics I would imagine that David Mulgeta used for Deshaun against the Browns to get more money, or that they used against a, when you're in negotiations, you are going to use whatever you can to get leverage. A lot of times it means leaking things to the public or saying things in public or going to the public. I get what everyone's saying. They think this is Bush League. Tony Busby has a job to do, and his job is to, his, whether you agree with it or not, his job is to get the most money he can for his clients. The same way David Mulgeta's job is to get the most money for his clients. This is not what they're doing is using leverage, whether you like it, whether I like what Deshaun did with his contract, sitting out or whatever.
If Deshaun says this, now this is your friend saying it's Bush League. If Rusty Harden comes out and says this, that's a pot calling, now not Rusty, but Deshaun and his team, pot calling the kettle black. You want to talk about Bush League? Is just deciding, I ain't playing for you. You just gave me $27 million plus $10 million all of last season to sit around and not play because I don't want to play for you anymore, Cam, because I don't like you.
Worst case scenario was a...
Because you didn't listen to me when I said I want this coach.
But worst case scenario was a setup from the beginning where you're going to get your money and then later down the road you would do this, which previously I discounted, but now I... You know,
I'm not sure you can.
I don't know, because this is now happening with Mulgeta clients multiple times.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can just discount that. But I look, it's embarrassing for Deshaun, and it may be low rent, and it's kind of – it feels dirty. Like, it feels kind of –
It does.
Scummy, but he is doing –
You know what else is scummy? Forcing women to do stuff in a massage.
That's true, too. But what he is doing –
Allegedly.
What he is doing, though – What he's doing is using his leverage, and that's what David Mulgeta just did to get Deshaun that contract and to get him a second contract, basically back-to-back. You use leverage, and I'm not a fan of negotiations a lot of the time because this is the kind of stuff that happens. It's sometimes guys will, quote-unquote, play dirty, but this is the leverage Tony Busby has, and there's been no movement on the settlement. Since Deshaun was almost going to be traded, like there was a willingness to settle when he was going to be traded to Miami. I think Tony's saying, "Where's the willingness to settle now?" And if he's not, I think Tony Busby is using what he believes is his leverage, and I think it is leverage. If we're looking at it objectively, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I don't want any more of this stuff out. And you and I've talked about this. This is what was going to get out. Mm-hmm. This is why I thought Deshaun would settle. Pretty quickly, because you don't want this stuff to get out.
Man, you can't keep on doing this 22 times. He's going to destroy.
And Busby's going to keep doing this.
Yes. And again, we said this before. Deshaun, this is public information. And everything that is going to be asked of you in these depositions is going to be public. You can't let this get out. You'll never be able to bounce back from this. There are plenty of people in Cleveland that already totally dislike you. They dislike you even more now after these depositions, after this stuff came out yesterday. And if there's another 21 of them, holy crap. All right, when we come still ahead, Jim Callis, we're going to talk Major League Baseball and the Astros specifically with Jim Callis from MLB Network coming up at the bottom of the hour. We got some other stuff that we haven't even gotten to the basketball yet. There was a great game couple of good games last night. We got to talk about. We will do that on the other side.
James came up huge. Yeah. We have not talked about James.
As always,
James
in a
came
big,
up
in a big
you,
situation.
You need a big shot from James at the end of a game in a big spotlight game. I got you, is what James basically said.
But first,
John Pete got a little taste last night.
But first, you got Maestro Dobell.
Let's talk about Maestro Dobell. Maestro Dobell is a tequila maker, 11 generations. I wonder if there was a generation that was better than the other ones. You know, 11 generations of tequila makers. I wonder if there was one like, oh, man, this is the GOAT generation of making tequila for Maestro Dobell. I'm sure there was. I don't know who it would be. I do know they use 100% pure agave when it comes to making their tequila. They have standards that meet the highest standards for all of the different varietals that they put out there, including the Reposado, the Silver, the Smoked Silver. They've got Añejo, Añejo Extra. They've got Cristalino. So they started Cristalino where they take the Añejo Extra, the Reposado. What they do is they blend them, they charcoal filter them, And so it's a clear flavor. I mean, it's a clear profile that has really distinct notes at the back end, and it's something that if you're a tequila fan and aficionado, you're really, really going to love the Cristalinos because they're so unique. And they started that variety, the Cristalino, and now others have, of course, tried to copy. But Maestro Dobel, there can only be one. So if there is a tequila that you are looking for and you want something to elevate your cocktails, your margaritas, or even your sipping experience, make sure that you try my friends over at Maestro Dobel.
Why don't we take a break?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
97.5.
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, 820 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It was called it.
So,
and they reversed it.
Yeah. So last night.
So it was a big matchup.
Yeah.
76ers were a 1.5-point favorite against the Milwaukee Bucks. Big matchup in the East. I mean, the Bucks to me are still the team. Like, you gotta, to be the best, you gotta beat the best. Woo! They're the Ric Flair of the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks. They still got the best player in basketball, Giannis. And that's the way it goes. I mean, we can say Joel Embiid, but you know what? When it's nut cutting time, I know the guy that's the back-to-back MVP. That, did you see the game Giannis had yesterday against Joel Embiid? Did you happen to see that by any chance?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he had a huge, huge game yesterday. So
it's what he does.
It is what he does.
So some people.
Yesterday was a 40-point, 14-rebound game in 37 minutes.
Yeah.
Against Embiid. So what happened was the 76ers were winning. Then fourth quarter, the Bucks had a big run. And they went kind of back and forth. The Bucks had a lead, and then a three-pointer by Embiid cut it to 117 to 116, and they had a chance to take the lead. Embiid missed a shot. The Bucks get the rebound with under 20 seconds to go. They get the ball to Giannis, who tries to run away from the fouls, but they still foul him. Well, you know what Giannis is going to do. It's going to be not make a free throw at least. So he made one, missed the other one. They called defense. They called timeout. So it's 118 to 116. There's 12 and a half seconds left. James Harden has the ball. They inbound James Harden. James, you know, is yo-yoing around the top of the key like James is going to do. We all know what's coming. What's coming if he's doing that?
A three.
A step back three, obviously. So step backs, fires a three. It doesn't hit. It hits the foam on the backboard about 1 foot left of the rim.
Right.
And Giannis, it's like everyone's jarred because – when you expect the ball to carom off of a rim, you have a certain readiness level. And when it misses that rim, your timing gets thrown off when it hits the foam in the backboard and immediately shoots down. Like, so Embiid caught it, tried to get it back up on the paint for two. Giannis jumped up, smacked it against the backboard, goaltending, 118 to 118, and they were going to overtime. But wait a minute. They call for a replay. They check the replay. Clean. He got it before it hit the backboard. Giannis, of course, the best player in basketball and back-to-back MVP and champion, who went 40 points and 14 rebounds, he makes a play to win the game. What does James do? He literally missed the rim on the last shot.
Is it an air ball if it actually touched the bottom of the backboard?
Yes, it's still technically considered an air
ball. It's an air ball.
Yeah.
Right.
So
some people were critical of James.
76ers fans were not happy. You know, Giannis is averaging now. He's tied for second. Like, no one's talking about him in the MVP race.
Well, yeah, he is. Yeah, they are. Yeah,
are they starting to now?
Yeah,
he's 29-9 now. He's tied for second in the league. He's fifth in rebounds. He is second in PER in the efficiency numbers.
Yeah,
PER. He's tied for second in scores.
And who's number one? Jokic.
Is Jokic number
Jokic one?
Okay.
So Embiid last night, and I was listening to the guys, and they talk a lot of basketball. They got Jay Will on.
Harden had 32. Max, like, Harden had a good game.
They're talking about the MVP. They talk a lot about the MVP, and there was an Embiid and Jokic race. And now, yeah, because I think people are probably tired of Giannis winning the MVP.
Yeah, Embiid is like, Giannis is actually ahead of Embiid. And in PER, he's second. Giannis is, I mean, Embiid is third. Giannis is second.
Yeah.
They're both tied. He's tied scoring between the
and
two
PER
of them.
PER is.
The rebound, Embiid is seventh.
And they were talking about this morning, is that PER is probably the best representative of how good a basketball player you are.
Yeah, it's the best.
And look at the top three. Jokic, Giannis, and because there's a lot of them where you're like, oh, that guy is up here in that stat, but it's just not right. Jokic is having the best season, and Giannis is right there, and Embiid is right there. So it's going to be a difficult. I do think, though, that Jokic is probably still the favorite now, but Giannis, I think there's some Giannis fatigue right now. I mean, he's won a couple in a row. He won
He's not a U.S. born player. There's a bigoted level of basketball fans.
Neither is Jokic.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there is. I honestly believe it's not hard to see. Like, we first saw it from Stephen A. Smith and some others when Porzingis was drafted, and you saw and actually even into the 2000s when the international run was coming, it kind of dried up because you had some guys who busted. But some of the comments on draft days that have been made about international players, you don't see it as much. It's really unfortunate because at one point we had, I remember one caller was talking about how they're taking Americans' jobs, and it's like, what? What do you know what this sounds like? This is international basketball. These guys deserve a chance to play also. And there was an idea that, you know, I think there's been a bigoted response towards international players. And Giannis doesn't fit the mold of what people want or like. At least some people, I think, who are basketball fans want a quote-unquote cooler top player. I don't know. Let me get RJ in here because RJ's a basketball fan. RJ,
How about your team last night?
Yeah, well, he's the Lakers.
Look
at
it, and he's all Lakered up. He's got a Laker jacket.
That's a defiant look for the year you're having right now.
By the way, is it like 12? If it's 12 degrees outside, where you were wearing a Lakers jacket and a sweatshirt and sweats.
It's a look. It's a vibe.
I heard it was going to rain, so I don't know Houston weather here.
It's still 80 degrees here when it rains.
Well, now I know.
It's basically Jacksonville.
Basically.
We're basically Jacksonville weather. It's not that dissimilar.
Right. Yeah, right.
What do you think about, number one, do you think, do you agree or disagree about that general basketball fans or an element of fans and / media maybe have never really given Giannis the love he deserves? I think if Giannis if he was a high school All-American, a McDonald's All-American who spent a year at Kentucky, I think it'd be totally different.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at it, when he was drafted, you saw his highlight tape. You thought he was playing at like a local YMCA, and they were laughing at him. They're like, look at the gym he's playing at. Is this a professional league or is this a men's league? So now, you know, when he comes out and is now doing his thing, puts a few pounds of muscle on him, now he's the best thing out. But it seems like reporters forget that you were laughing at him before he became a star.
Yeah, and do you think, if you had a choice between Giannis or Embiid is there even a choice right now? I mean, Giannis is battle tested.
Throw everybody, listen, just do this. Throw everybody in the hopper. Who's the first player you're taking out of the NBA?
I would take Giannis.
Yeah, I would take Giannis.
Giannis is now a half game out.
How could you not take Giannis? I mean, Jokic is nice, and Embiid is nice.
Giannis is a freak
Steph
athlete.
Steph is nice. It's Giannis. Giannis is the number
scores,
one guy.
He rebounds. He blocks shots. He's a defender.
He's a champion.
It's honestly not close. He is a younger version of a cross between what LeBron was, and I know LeBron's still a good player, but what LeBron was at his peak physically, and maybe
Shaq. He's dominant defensively. He's on the boards. He's a force. I mean, a major force. A younger Shaq. He's a lot.
Like Duncan, where you have the physicality of. I'm giving you LeBron's physicality. It's the same thing as Shaq, only a different position type. But now, where he's physically too much for everybody else, especially in his prime. But then, when you look at the defensive prowess and the rebounding and everything, that's why I go to Tim Duncan. Not that the playing style is similar. The playing style is not similar. But But it's hard to think of another guy like Giannis. I mean, he has elite length. He has elite defensive range.
And athleticism.
He has elite athleticism. Yeah. He is impossible to physically stop when he gets going towards a basket.
Right. We gotta
break it
here.
They're about to be the one seed,
right.
John.
Right.
They're about to be the one seed.
Well, the Heat are still up there, but yeah, absolutely. Jim Callis is going to join us. We're going to talk Major League Baseball and specifically your Astros. On the other side, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. John and Lance, along with RJ, being joined right now by Jim Callis, senior writer for MLB Pipeline. He can talk about the minor league systems, obviously, but also the big club. And let's bring him in here to talk some Astros baseball as we get ready for a season just 8 days away. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. So what do we expect out of Jeremy Peña? This is a big topic of conversation here. Jeremy Peña, what can we expect out of this young man early on taking place with all this pressure of taking Carlos Correa's place?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing I think that's going to help him is, you know, he's the son of a big leaguer in Geronimo Peña. So I think he has, you know, some idea what to expect. He's got that high baseball IQ of guys growing up around the game. You know, I don't think he's going to come in and try to feel like he has to replace Carlos Correa because he's not going to, you know, replace him. You know, he's not going to be what Carlos Correa was. But he's a good player. I think he's going to give the Astros quality defense right off the bat. I've always been a little bit lighter on the bat, I think, than others. I mean, I know he had, you know, very impressive stint in AAA last year, but it was only 30 games long. You know, that's his history of hitting for power was those 30 games. And, you know, I don't know if I necessarily buy that he's a 20 home run guy. You know, I think he can, you know, hit for decent average. Maybe he'd be a 12 to 15 home run guy as a rookie and play solid defense. And I mean, the nice thing is on that Astros team, I mean, I still think they're the prohibitive favorite in the AL West. They don't need him to come in and beat Carlos Correa. They just need him to beat Jeremy Peña and play good defense and provide a little bit of offense.
Yeah, and this is really going to be, you know, but one of the things we talked about was the loss of Carlos. Defensively, you won't have the same Carlos Correa, but you'll have a good defensive player. You may not have the same pop in the bat, but you're going to potentially have a pretty solid one. He's a much cheaper option. What we're really concerned about, though, Jim, is losing George Springer and now Carlos Correa. The concern is what happens with the leadership in the locker room, the camaraderie in the locker room, the thing that made the Astros.
No, you're right. And I mean, and I think, I mean, look, I mean, the guys there are professionals and they're not going to come out and say this, but I think there's also a sense, you know, when you're a big leaguer and you're a veteran and they've been to what, five straight American League Championship Series. I mean, the team's winning, the team's doing well financially. I think those things get noticed. You know, why aren't we retaining our players? Or if we're not retaining them, why aren't we going out and doing, say, what the Braves did? I mean, you can debate. I don't think the Braves should have let Freddie Freeman go. But, you know, that happened. But they went out and they got Matt Olson. And you don't see the Astros doing that. So I'm sure it's a sense of frustration, not just to the fans, but to some of the players, too, wondering, look, you know, we keep winning. You know, why are we subtracting rather than adding?
Pedro León is having a big, big, big spring. How far away is he?
That's a tough question. Because it's, you know, it's hard to judge him because, you know, Cuban defector, hadn't played in a couple of years. You know, it takes time to come back from that layoff. And the Astros very aggressively moved him to Double A and had him learn. I mean, he played some shortstop, but he was more of a center fielder in the past. Had him learn shortstop on the fly. So, I mean, that's a difficult adjustment. He got off to a slow start. He was starting to come around. And then he broke his left pinky on a slide and missed 2 months. And so he never really got going. I don't know. I mean, to me, I wouldn't necessarily count on Pedro León for much in 2022 at the big league level. I saw him in the Arizona Fall League. He really struggled there, and that's you know, double-A caliber pitching. I just think, given that he didn't light it up last year, he had a, you know, about a 30% strikeout rate, and he hit 220 overall, and then he didn't tear up the Arizona Fall League, I think it would be tough to count on him being a productive big leaguer this year. I mean, he's got great physical tools, but he's got to show that he can make consistent contact before you can count on him. So, to me, he'd be more, that would be like a pleasant surprise if you got a lot out of him. I mean, he can look great. I mean, he can crush the ball in BP, can really run, he's got a great arm, but we need to see consistent production on the field first.
Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, senior writer with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Can we expect Corey Lee in 2023?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you're talking more towards the second half of the year, to be honest. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him because, I mean, he's kind of the opposite of Martin Maldonado, who does not provide you much offense but is a tremendous defender. And Corey's improved. I think you're looking at Corey kind of being an average receiver and blocker. He's got a really, really strong arm, but the receiving and blocking, they're just okay. But, I mean, he's more of an offensive guy. I mean, he's a guy who has a ton of raw power, you know, can hit for average, you know, does not strike out excessively. So you might, I could see, after they polish up his catching a little bit more, maybe you go to an offensive-defensive platoon, sort of, with him and Maldonado. Although, I mean, I think it also comes down to how Jason Castro performs. If Jason Castro is performing well, then maybe they slow play Corey Lee a little bit. But I do think he's kind of on course to be ready at some point in the second half.
It is amazing that Maldonado we survived through just horrific offensive shortstops who are supposed to be these great glove shortstops, but they were so bad offensively, and the Astros had such dead spots in the lineup back in the 2000s with Tim Bogar and Adam Everett and those guys. And now it is, and Brad Ausmus at catcher. Now it's like I have a different appreciation, and probably because I've seen them make plays. Carlos was just a rare specimen defensively. But watching Maldonado and seeing the plays that he's made in the postseason and how important that is, I just have a different appreciation for a really, really plus defensive catcher.
Yeah, and I think, too, if you talk to pitchers, you know, if you talk to Astros pitchers about Maldonado, they'd certainly say this. And pitchers, you know, who have catchers who are kind of in that similar boat say the same thing. I think when the pitchers are out on the mound, they appreciate Martin Maldonado, and they really don't care what he hits. You know, like they don't, you know, like, what did he hit? 172 last year? I think he hit a few home runs. But, like, it doesn't matter to them. Just having a guy who, you know, for now, we still have umpires. You know, we're going to have probably automated strike zone at some point, but we still have umpires. And, you know, being able to, you know, receive the ball and frame pitches and steal strikes and, you know, make some big throws when they're needed. You know, I think the pitchers are happy with it. So, I mean, it's weird because it's, you know, I think, you know, there's so many people who play fantasy baseball, and, you know, Martin Maldonado is probably not a chic pick for your fantasy team. But in terms of helping your major league team win, he does a lot of things to help the team win that aren't necessarily reflected just in pure stats.
What's your thoughts on, and we're with Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, what's your thoughts on Hunter Brown possibly contributing this year?
Yeah, I really like Hunter Brown. I mean, every time I talk to the Astros, I still don't understand how he went in the fifth round of the draft. He should have gone higher than that a couple years ago. And, you know, I think he's kind of overlooked a little bit, you know, by the typical baseball fan because he came out of NCAA Division II school at Wayne State. You know, he hasn't, you know, put up, like, glitter ERAs. I think his career ERA is a little bit over four. But he misses a lot of bats. He's still honing the control. But, I mean, this is a guy who can, you know, hit 99 miles an hour with his fastball. He's doing that late in the year after, you know, a long season. He's got a devastating curveball he's added. It's a power curveball he picked up in pro ball. He's got a harder mid-80s slider. He's got a fading changeup. The Astros have this knack. Now, he's gotten more publicity than, say, like a Framber Valdez or a Christian Javier or a Luis Garcia in prospect circles, but, like, he might be the latest, you know, rookie pitcher that has gotten, you know, not a ton of hype, and then all of a sudden he's just dealing for the Astros. I think you're going to see him at some point this year. You know, I think he might be the guy who exceeds expectations because I just don't think he gets a lot of hype, but he's got really, really good stuff, and if he can just command it a little bit better, I think he could be a real weapon for that pitching staff, whether it's, you know, fitting into the rotation if they have need there, or maybe being like a two- or three-inning reliever, you know, breaking in that way. He's a super interesting guy.
You know, you bring up a good point. Did you see what Luis Garcia, did you see that when, I mean, how could you see it? He didn't spend any time in the minors.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I mean, look, we knew he had a live arm, but, like, I didn't think he was going to come out and be the best rookie pitcher in the American League last year. And, you know, I mean, look, the Astros do a great job on the pitching side of getting guys who are not, you know, first-round picks or million-dollar international signings, and then you look up, and they're big-league contributors. I mean, they have so many guys like that. They just excel at doing that. I mean, you know, from the draft, I mean, I think Brandon Belak was like an 11th-round pick, and Josh James was a 34th-round pick, and, you know, Christian Javier and Valdez and Garcia and even Jose Urquidy. None of those guys were big-money international guys. And that's kind of honestly, I mean, how they've kept this thing going as they've had some pitching injuries. And, I mean, you know what, like in the World Series in 19, it was Verlander, Greinke, and Cole. And they didn't have any of those guys last year because Verlander was hurt and the other two guys were gone. And they made it back to the ALCS yet again. So they're doing a fantastic job. They do a really nice job, better than most teams, of helping guys throw harder and add spin, and the four-seam fastball plays better up in the zone, and then they get more spin on a downer curveball. They just have like a secret blueprint that just makes a lot of pitchers better than they were when they first get their hands on them.
Yeah. All right, Jim Callis, man, good stuff. We really appreciate it. I'm a little worried about the Mariners this year. The Astros are the favorite, but I think the Mariners are.
He's worried about a team every year.
I'm worried every about year the Mariners.
Scares them. You know the odds,
Jim, back
the
me
Angels,
up on this.
How the good Angels are the betting favorite.
Fair. Wait a minute.
The Angels are number two betting favorite in the
is
division.
Is that right? Okay,
yeah.
But then you take the Angels, I'll take the Mariners.
I'm with you though. I would be more worried about. I'd be more worried about Seattle. They got a young team. They're on the rise.
Thank you.
I'd be, you know, they just added Robbie Ray to their rotation, which was bolstered the rotation. They got Jesse Winker. You know, for nothing that was going to necessarily hurt them, you know, help them this year. I'd be more worried about the Mariners too. I'm with you on that one.
Thank you,
Jim Callis.
Somebody who knows baseball,
Jim
Callis.
Jim, they call. I'm a numbers guy.
Okay? Oh yeah,
Jim Callis, and I have been called Mr. Baseball before. Jim Callis is so good, I'm going to start referring to him as Mr. Baseball.
That's right.
That's very official. Kind. Very kind.
That's official.
That's all right. Jim, hey, great talking to you. We really appreciate the insight. And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Take
There's
care.
Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Really good.
Really good. That's good information.
He
right
knew
there.
Everybody.
He doesn't know about that.
Well, the thing with him, he's drafted in the fifth out of Wayne State, and he was just giving us the Hunter Brown lowdown, and everybody in the minors. That's great.
That's hard to do, too.
No. That's like having an NFL draft for all the teams.
Every team.
You have to know all the teams and all the team's prospects. Like, that's a lot.
No kidding.
That's a lot.
That seems like a lot of work. I'm out. Time to...
no one asked you to work at MLB Pipeline, John.
Hey, Lomas Brown is going to join us at the top of the hour. We're going to talk Detroit Lions of football. See who are they leaning to? They've got Hard Knocks coming up.
They've
got the draft in 2024.
But more importantly, they draft before the Texans.
Yeah, that's the important part. So we'll talk to Lomas Brown at the top of the hour right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. The godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. A couple of stories we haven't gotten to yet. Apparently the Ravens are having a hard time with Lamar Jackson. Their owner, Steve Bisciotti, who's I love the name. He says, "Well, we really need Lamar. We're not gonna talk about this anymore until Lamar actually gives us a call. Lamar won't answer their phone calls on a new contract.
He just doesn't want to talk about it. He just wants to prepare for the season. I mean, it is March.
I
It's a ways away, the season.
Yeah, it's a ways away.
I know you show up in camp at like in
summer. Might be busy though, right?
It's a sore subject around football because a lot of football people, and I mean former players, get really upset about this. So Lamar Jackson is a very, very unique thing. I'm not sure. I think it's a trust issue where maybe the family just doesn't trust people. But Lamar doesn't have an agent. He doesn't have a marketing rep. He doesn't have a shoe deal. People have been trying to get shoe deals done with him since he came out of college. And he says, nah, just send me the shoes. That's fine. I'll wear them. But I don't want your money, I guess. So he doesn't get a shoe deal done. He loses millions in marketing every single year. And then now they can't get him. They just can't, like, his mom is his agent. And they can't get him to talk about, like, they've tried to reach out about contract. And it's getting to the point now where they don't. Here's what's going to happen. This is what's going to get interesting. Now that the market reset has come out with, and there was a reference how that's made it challenging. The Ravens have come out and said this. Nobody in the NFL wants to pay a Deshaun Watson contract. Nobody. And they will fight against that being the norm because the Browns did a desperate deal the same way the Texans did a desperate deal for Laremy Tunsil. Well, the rest of the league said, nope, we're not doing the Laremy Tunsil deal. That's not our norm. Well, now we'll see if the league says Deshaun Watson is not our norm for quarterback deals. But if Lamar Jackson, you know, the argument is if Lamar had a really good agent, or even just a good agent, not even have to be really good, they would fight for him and they would get him. Ultimately, they would use their leverage and get a deal done that would be in the neighborhood of a Deshaun deal. Right now, with no professional representation, I'm not sure, like, and no phone calls to the team, I don't know what's going on. And the Ravens are going to be put in a tough position at some point where if he doesn't have a good year this year or is injured, they're going to have to make a tough decision on him. Do you want to give a guy, if he's injured a second time and misses time this year like he did last year, are you going to want to give him a deal that is guaranteed in the $200 million range?
Even if he does get injured, guys get injured. Is he your franchise quarterback?
Well, he has not shown. What he's shown is it's no different that, look, he's an explosive playmaker. He has some rare stuff to him with the ball in his hands, which is why I bring up the injury thing.
He's the most explosive other than Tyreek Hill.
He's the most explosive quarterback we've ever seen. Yeah. And he can run. He's got run pass stuff, but he's not an accurate passer. He's not a consistent passer. He is an elite runner who can change the course of games. He's a 1,000-yard rusher more than once. The problem for him is that when you are reliant upon that elite skill set, it puts you in harm's way more. So we have to talk about injury. Injuries happen, but not when you're running. When you're a running quarterback, injuries can happen more. And he's not a 225. He's not built like Hurts or Malik Willis. I mean, he's not a big, sturdy, thick-legged guy who's built to take on more damage. That's a concern. Now, Lamar was not hurt running, though, this year. I want to make sure Lamar was hurt with what I thought was a late hit and was one that could happen to any pocket quarterback.
Yeah.
So that was not a running injury. But this has always been the concern with Lamar is when you do run, if he gets hit, and I don't see him take a lot of big hits, so we have to say that, too. But that's the concern you have. Is he an elite quarterback when you take everything into account? No, he's not an elite quarterback. But my definition for elite quarterback is much more strict. I don't think Deshaun is an elite quarterback. I think he has elite potential. And I think he's on the verge. I think he had an elite season. Lamar did when he was an MVP. That was an elite passing season. I mean, that was an elite season all the way around. That was an elite season. Cam Newton had an elite MVP season, but was not an elite quarterback during his time. Very few quarterbacks are elite quarterbacks. Yeah. Very few quarterbacks.
Speaking of
a handful, five of them, at most at any given time, are elite quarterbacks.
Yeah. Tyreek Hill, apparently Mike McDaniel is going to use him like Deebo Samuel.
Yep.
Smart. The Chiefs ran him a couple of times, and guess what?
It's a nightmare.
When
he's in the backfield, you're like, oh, and it changes. You can use him on play action as soon as you fake a stretch play or a pitch play with him. Whatever the play side is, everyone's panicking in that direction, and the backside is going to be you're going to have one-on-one easier matchups defense. Mike McDaniel, if he is a smart, creative playmaker, is going to – Debo is a phenomenal running back. Like, Debo has running back skills, instincts, and vision. He is hard to tackle. You're taking a guy who has some of the same qualities, but now you're putting speed in him that's not regular for humans to run that fast. And they got another one just like it in Jalen.
Yeah.
Like, Mike McDaniel could F some people up. Now the question is whether or not up. He's Tua gonna mess some people up.
If Tua can take advantage of it.
How hard is it to hand off or pitch to
well,
him?
Well, no. You fake the handoff and throw it to Jalen.
Jimmy Garoppolo did.
Yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo got as far as he did, and that guy is just a guy.
Right. Well, we'll see. The AFC is awful tough. I mean,
it is.
It's
just
awful tough.
It needs to be. Matt, in that same offense, Matt Schaub had his career year. Like, this is a different version of it to where it's actually more modified to make it easier. Matt Schaub didn't have RPOs. Matt Schaub wouldn't have been an RPO guy.
No.
But Tua can run RPOs. Yep. Tua can run, you know, quick pitch stuff. He can run inside zone, outside zone. He can, like, this is good. Never will an offense be easier for a quarterback than in Miami. If you can't succeed here, then you should not be.
Not with this.
You should not. Yeah, this is. You can't fail with this.
Well, now, when we come back, Lomas Brown, we're going to talk Detroit on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
This is Nolan Ryan, and you're listening to The Bench with John and Lance on ESPN 97.5. One of them owes me $20, but I'll let you guess which one.
Healthcare is so overwhelming. My doctors rushed through visits. I was billed for things that should be covered, and no one was really listening. I felt lost. That's why I called Solace. They paired me with a trained healthcare advocate who actually knew how to get things done. She helped me find the right doctor, coordinate transportation after surgery, and overturn a medical bill. She even joined my appointments to make sure I got real answers. And the best part, it's covered by Medicare, and they stay with you for as long as you need help. My Solace advocate is always just a phone call or text away.
96% of patients report better care with a Solace advocate. That means better health outcomes, less stress, and finally feeling heard. See if you qualify at solacehealth.com. That's S-O-L-A-C-E health.com. Or call 888-7-SOLACE. 888-7-S-O-L-A-C-E. That's 888-7-SOLACE.
Don't face the healthcare system alone. Find Solace. Visit solacehealth.com today.